everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report. I'm John Adirola. It is Wednesday, and so, JR.
Yo, what's going on?
JR, take it away. The whole show is yours.
Why not? I mean, I come with the right information every week. I know a few weeks ago we talked about the candy bars, and that all panned out correctly and well. I made my point, and I think I've convinced the large majority of the American people that I was right on that.
Which is the one that you hated? Milky Way?
No, Milky Way is okay. It's Three Musketeers. And,
oh, that's better than Milky Way.
And Kit Kat. That's the only thing worse than Three Musketeers is a Kit Kat. The only thing worse than Kit Kat is Three Musketeers.
I don't, like, you could, like a Snickers, you could not like Snickers because you don't like nuts or something. What could drive a normal person to hate a Kit Kat? There's nothing, like, offensive about it.
Wafer cookies.
God. Wafer cookies are great too. I don't understand what's wrong with you. Okay, we're gonna try to fix you, but we're gonna try to fix the country too, because there's a lot of issues that we're gonna be dealing with. So we're gonna be talking about Facebook and their policy on fact-checking politicians. Zuckerberg laid out a standard and then immediately started falling apart once he didn't like some of the exceptions. And he started making bad exceptions once progressive activists started challenging it. So we're gonna have that for you. We've got some updates on impeachment, including Donald Trump. He often reacts to news in a very knee-jerk way, but this is one of the funniest knee-jerk reactions from Donald Trump ever. But then also a congressman, a Republican congressman, has made a mockery of the argument Republicans are making right now against the impeachment inquiry. They say it's about the process and about the transparency. Wait until you see his attempts on CNN to defend that. And then we're gonna be closing out the show the way I prefer never to close out the show, and that is with Dave Rubin. But he said something so stupid, so offensive, that we have to respond to it. It has to do with California and its wildfires, a serious threat that is causing the evacuation of countless homes, the destruction of dozens already. For him, it's a punchline. We'll describe that a little bit later on, but we start off with domestic news. At yesterday's hearings, Mark Zuckerberg was questioned quite harshly by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about the ability of politicians to lie in their ads. And Zuckerberg said, look, you may not like it, but if it's a politician, we will let them lie. We will not fix those lies. That is the standard. We'll see if that actually holds up, because it didn't. A progressive activist decided, you know what, I'm going to test this by having my PAC run an ad. And I'm gonna do the exact thing that AOC was talking about. And that was having an ad implying that Republicans who have not supported the Green New Deal did support the Green New Deal. So that ad went up on Facebook. It was apparently very successful. It ran until Saturday after it was then flagged as false by a fact-checking group hired by the social media giant. Facebook, so by the way, it was taken down at that point. So they said that they would allow it. They didn't when it was running as a PAC ad. Facebook confirmed to CNN on Saturday, okay, yes, we took that down, but if AOC, a politician, had run the same ad, it would not be removed because fact-checking does not extend to politicians. So sure, this was a political group that ran it and we took it down, but if it was a politician, then we would have left it up. But would you actually? So Adriel Hampton is a political activist who has been testing this and so made that initial ad, and here on CNN talking about the effort.
Folks might be familiar with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez challenging Mark Zuckerberg and asking if she made such an ad, if she could run it, and him saying probably in congressional testimony on Wednesday. When I saw that testimony, I thought we should test the premise. I didn't know Facebook's rules on fake ads quite as well as I do today when we first put it up on Thursday. I usually don't run fake ads, but this was an interesting opportunity to test that premise that it's okay for politicians to lie. The ad was taken down by Facebook after about 24 hours, but in that time it went quite viral. And it was clear right from the submission to Facebook that it was not a truthful ad, because clearly, as you said, Senator Graham has not endorsed the Green New Deal.
Sure. Okay, so describing the initial process, they put up the ad, it gets taken down. So the response is from Facebook, but you're not a politician. And we said politicians get to lie. So what if he was a politician? He decided to register to run for California's governor. So now he's a politician and reruns it as a politician. Turns out they don't like that either though, watch.
So it gets polled. And then you decide you're going to run for governor because it's okay for politicians, but it's not okay for PACs.
We tried it again with a politician, but and it was taken down again. And they said that was because it was you can't a politician can't advertise something that's already been debunked. So it would have to be an original lie. And so we also were told by fact checkers who work with Facebook that a politician who's not actively running for office or in elected office might also be disqualified from this exception. My concern is that Donald Trump, who plans a $1 billion campaign led by a campaign manager who is a Facebook expert who purports to run millions of Facebook ads, can use this exemption to manipulate the election very easily.
So look, what Zuckerberg said to AOC now looks even more laughable than it did. He wanted to say, hey, it's not up to us to fact check politicians. They get to do what they want to do. Except if they're saying something that I don't like. And if they're making me look bad, then we're going to take it out. Or, you know, if it's already been debunked. But again, you just said it wasn't up to you to determine truth from fact. So what does it matter if it had been prior debunked? Or, because after all, it could be being debunked right now by a non-politician. That wouldn't apply. So why does it matter if it was debunked in the past? And then even if that doesn't protect them, because obviously the next thing to do would be to run a new lie as the candidate for governor. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to get out in front of that by saying, oh no, but you have to be an actively running politician. He says, no, I'm actually running. In fact, now I'm really excited about this issue. This is what I'm gonna run on. But you know they're not gonna let him do it. This is how they're going to choose winners and losers when it comes to lying. We think this politician's serious, we think this politician not so much, so they don't get to lie. Only the ones we like get to lie.
This is when exposing a bad approach to things actually works out. You know, whenever you try to convince someone politically of your argument and you try and tell them all the facts and this and that, but it doesn't work. No one's ever gonna go for that, which they have to make them convince themselves, mm-hmm. which is a much harder endeavor to take on. You have to make them make a point, then make them make their counterpoint to their own first point, and then they're gonna have a problem because they're arguing with themselves now. So you have to go through this whole process of running a fake ad, having it pulled down, register as a politician, have it pulled down, ask the next question, all because Mark Zuckerberg, when he was talking to AOC in that testimony, decided to say something that made things, that complicated things much further. Instead of recognizing the flaws in your system and saying, yeah, we're gonna address that because that shouldn't be the process on our site, you tried to go with, it'll be fine, we'll just let it happen. Yeah. That doesn't work that way. This is the real world. You can't just say, oh, well, when you run this kind of organization, this company. So now you've been exposed even further for the lies that you already put forward, your biases, and the people that you're gonna allow to lie versus the people that you're not gonna allow to lie. Now things are much worse. There was an old commercial back in the day when I was a kid. This isn't necessarily about lying with Zuckerberg because he just believes he should let it all happen. When they say if you tell one lie, it leads to another, it was an old like 80s PSA show, commercial. So if you tell the first lie and you thought you got away with it, it's gonna lead to the next one and the next one and the next one. Next, you know, you're gonna be surrounded by all of your BS and you can't. And now you're cornered.
And that is where Zuckerberg and Facebook find themselves. By the way, in the past couple of days, a letter by hundreds of Facebook employees went out arguing against this new policy. We're not gonna read the entire thing, but they say it communicates that we are okay profiting from deliberate misinformation campaigns by those in or seeking positions of power. And again, not all of those seeking positions of power, but now we've decided that we get to choose which ones we want and which ones we don't. Maybe he really likes Pete Buttigieg, maybe Pete Buttigieg gets to lie. But he hates Elizabeth Warren. Maybe Elizabeth Warren doesn't get to lie. She's not really seriously running. Pete Buttigieg, he's seriously running. That's the standard I'll use. And then they use even more laughable explanations to try to distract you from the issue, which is they're gonna profit by allowing people like Donald Trump to run hundreds of millions of dollars in lies on Facebook. So two of their members, their execs put out this op-ed. Facebook, we shouldn't become the gatekeeper of truth on candidate ads. But it's the thing below that's so ridiculous. Anyone who thinks Facebook should decide which claims by politicians are acceptable might ask themselves this question. Why do you want us to have so much power? Oh, come on. You guys want all the power and all the money in the world. That would be like if a fire department let one house burn down and they responded by saying, why do you want us to decide whose house stands and whose doesn't? Why do you want us to have that much power? Why do you obsess over power? No, we want you to do your jobs. And all of this is a lie. It's not about whether it's been prior debunked or whether they're actively running or anything. What it's about is they are terrified of standing against Donald Trump. Donald Trump is gonna lie, and they don't want to be a social media outlet that says he's lying, we won't let him do it anymore. They don't have the courage to say that one obvious thing, and so they're twisting themselves into knots trying to come up with a strategy that seems comprehensible, and they haven't gotten there.
Let's keep it real. And also, many users on that site, they feed off of this type of stuff. Facebook is where you go where you want to get a lot of misinformation, or then a bunch of people fighting over politics, and 98% of them have no idea what they're talking about. They can't lose that block by having any kind of policing of false advertisements, especially from the kinds of candidates that do it mostly, which appeal to many of the users on Facebook, and those users will then revolt.
Yeah.
They're worried about all of that.
Ugh. Just a disgusting, oh God, Facebook's terrible. It's just the worst. There was never a good reason to be on it, but now I honestly, I don't know why I'm on it.
Keep up
but anyway,
your,
unfortunately, a lot of people are.
You keep up with your high school friends that you discovered a racist.
Yay. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
We already have ranked choice voting in a couple of narrow areas of the United States, and potentially could come to others in the near future. Joining us now to talk about the system and the possibility that it could be expanded to New York, we're joined now by New York State Assembly member Ron Kim. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Well, thank you for having me, John. I'm glad to be on.
Glad to have you here. So look, you've written a lot. We're going to talk about multiple issues, but you've written a lot about ranked choice voting, and I want to talk to you about what the system could bring, some of the benefits to it, but there is the possibility that coming up very soon in New York, it could be expanded there. Do you think that that's likely?
Yeah, I think that people are excited. I think that most of the progressive elected officials and so many of our Democratic colleagues are for this measure. We've had such a great momentum over the last couple of months making the case for ranked choice voting, and people no longer want to be associated with the negative campaigning and all the toxic behaviors around some of the current campaign system that is designed to suppress voters. And people want to be engaged. People want to feel like their voice is heard. And that's what the ranked choice voting would offer. And people are looking forward to that. And when New York does it, I know that there are other cities and other states have already done this. But when New York City does it, I think it would set a national precedence and a trend. And all around other cities and municipalities will look at New York and see it as the standard model to copy.
I think that it definitely could. When you bring up the negativity, what is it about a ranked choice voting system that you think would lead to less negative campaigning?
Yeah, the current system is all designed to get your voters to pull them out and hire as many consultants to suppress other voters that do not favor you. In this current ecosystem, the only people that are benefiting are the consultants and all these you know, lobbyists and all these people that make a living off of oppo research and trying to suppress as many voters and negative campaigns as possible. On the Rancho's voting, you can pick up to five people, choose up to five candidates. So you can't afford to go negative. You need to build coalitions. You need to drive campaigns based on issues and try to talk to as many voters as possible. And citywide campaigns, which is what this will do in 2021, when the mayoral race, the controller race, the public advocate, these are all citywide, New York citywide races that will participate in this. It will have a huge impact in immigrant communities like mine and marginalized communities that often do not participate or often do not get courted by mayoral candidates because they're too busy trying to go to their strengths. But when they have to get the top two, top three choices, they have to come into every single community that have not been traditionally engaged in some of these elections. And this is that is why it's healthy for democracy and it's healthy for marginalized minority and immigrant communities like mine.
Well, look, as you point out, I think if New York were to take up this system, I think that would draw a lot of interest to it around the country. We could possibly see it spread quite fast. And so it's going to be interesting to see how much involvement there is in this upcoming election, how supportive people are of the system. It's definitely one of the biggest opportunities I think ranked choice voting has had so far in America. And so thank you for describing some of the benefits of it on our audience. We've done a lot of videos about it, but I really want to flesh out, because it's so different than the way things go right now, it's important that people understand how it might actually work. But also, I want to talk about another issue that you write about quite often. You endorsed Bernie Sanders in the 2020 race, correct?
Yes, I did. I was the first New York elected official to come out and support Bernie back in April.
And one of the issues that I think you have a lot of philosophical overlap with Bernie Sanders on is that the current way that work is rewarded in this country seems to reward not the people doing the work, but the people who own the capital, own the corporations and things like that. Mm-hmm. You talk a lot about wanting to redesign money. When you talk about that, what do you mean?
We all know when any person, whether you're conservative, liberal, Democrat, doesn't matter where you come from, when you ask any single person in our communities, who adds the most value to our communities, who adds the most value to our economy, it's the people who do the care work. It's the people who take care of kids. It's the people who take care of seniors, who are mentoring teenagers, who are taking care of our environment, our nature. They are the ones we all know that add the most value. But we have a monetary system, an economy that actually devalues them and those type of work, those type of care work, and that's fundamentally something that needs to be fixed in order for our economy to work again. So what we're proposing is that we need to restore the original meaning, the original vision of what money was supposed to be, which was always a medium to store and exchange as much value as possible in our economies, not extract value from our communities. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's become. So, but what we're proposing is using some of our state's benefits, our tax returns, and turn them into real exchangeable money designed to capture the unvalued, devalued, undervalued work that goes uncaptured every single day in our communities. And by doing so, we can get more cash flow back into the communities and spark commerce and finally uplift the caring economy that we all know is vital to our futures.
So what you're talking about, very interesting, obviously, but it's not something that you necessarily hear much about in normal day-to-day political communication. When you've talked with your constituents about some of these ideas, what has the reception of it been like?
Yeah, no, we have so many folks right now that are already struggling and trying to find any kind of access point to get some cash. We have seniors who are unknowingly committing Medicare fraud, Medicaid fraud, trading in their benefits at local pharmacies and for-profit senior centers to get a couple $100 so they can live a dignified life with their peers. We have seniors going on casino buses, selling their vouchers for a few bucks a day so they can pay for their rent every single month. There isn't enough cash going back into our communities. For 20 years, wages have been stagnant. So we know that there isn't an increase of wealth in our communities. And as a result, we're just left being pitted against each other, fighting for scraps, chump change every single day. And that's why we're seeing so much more ugliness and violence every single day in our communities. And at the core, we need more cash flow. We need more economic activities that captures the unvalued work in our local economies.
Ron Kim of the New York State Assembly, thank you so much for joining us and breaking down these
reasons. Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we're moving into impeachment. Donald Trump with a knee-jerk reaction to a defense of him. We'll break it down after this. The Wall Street Journal wrote an op-ed attempting to defend Donald Trump in this impeachment inquiry, and Trump is not having it. So here is the defense, first of all. The section says, intriguingly, Mr. Bill Taylor says in his statement that many people in the administration oppose the Rudy Giuliani effort, including some in senior positions at the White House. This matters because it may turn out that while Mr. Trump wanted a quid pro quo policy ultimatum towards Ukraine, he was too inept to execute it. Impeachment for incompetence would disqualify most of the government and most presidents at some point or another in office. So, look, yes, they are calling him inept and incompetent, but they're trying to get him out of being impeached because of it. And let's just acknowledge, this isn't even their idea, or at least they're not the first to come up with this. We made fun of Ben Shapiro a couple weeks ago when he said, no, you gotta be kidding. No, this is not a dude with a plan. And the problem for Republicans, they're not allowed to say that. That's the problem for Republicans, is that if you're a Republican senator and you say that Trump might attack you. So he's saying Trump is too dumb to crime, and you're seeing him there, but enlarged to be human scale. So look, this is the Wall Street Journal and the right wing's intellectual gladiator, both pointing out that Trump is too dumb to commit crimes. And he's also too dumb to just accept their defense, because apparently he's not a fan of it. According to the Daily Beast, the president mentioned he had seen it, that op-ed, and then he started saying things like, what are they talking about? If I wanted to do quid pro quo, I would have done the damn quid pro quo. And then defended his intelligence, and then talked about how perfect the call was, a source said. Another person familiar with the president's comments on the matter corroborated the account.
If you find yourself having to defend your intelligence every day at every turn, I think you might be the problem, and your intelligence just might be in question. Number two, when you have to, there's so many lies. We talked about the exorbitant number of lies this president has been telling since before he was even in office, obviously. When you have a group of people that has to defend it, from the Wall Street editorial board to other politicians and Republican Party and the RNC and then pundits on television, sometimes the BS is gonna cross over. So now you're like, man, what can we say now? Okay, he just can't do it. Because it went from Ukrainians didn't carry out the demands that Trump had. So that defense doesn't really work, because you asked for it. Just because you go to the bank with a gun and say, give me all your money, you don't get the money, or you only get $100, doesn't mean you didn't try to rob the bank. So he's too stupid to pull this off. Mm-hmm. And that's all you got left. And so for a man child that is never satisfied because he continues to sabotage himself and everyone else around him, there's nothing you can say that's gonna work out.
Yeah.
And now we've just reached that point again. Oh, I'm smart enough to pull off crimes. I've been pulling off crimes since 1967.
Yeah.
We got you.
I don't remember the exact example, but there's like an 80s movie with this where there's a bunch of kids, and there's a dumb kid, and they make fun of the kid by saying like, oh, I bet you're too stupid to run into the street. And he's like, oh, nuh-uh, I'm smart enough to run in the street. Like, that's what's happening here between a major news outlet and the president of the United States. Another source goes on to say, he was clearly unhappy. He did not like the word inept. Yeah, but they're trying to protect you, bro.
What he didn't like about the word inept is he didn't know what it meant.
That's true. It seems aggressive. They're trying to say that, like, you wouldn't have put together this complex of a plan with all of its parts and stuff. And he doesn't even know, he doesn't even see that they're trying to help him. This is a Wall Street Journal. They don't want him impeached. They don't want a Democrat in office. But he doesn't get that. He doesn't get his allies.
Defending your intelligence and then going into how you can pull it off anyway. Hey, bro, you did.
Yeah.
He points out every time. We don't need to go past anything else. And that perfect call, the only thing I'm surprised about is him saying that perfect call in private the way he says in public. Because I didn't even think he actually believed that.
Yeah. Maybe he really doesn't believe that.
You lie that much, you start believing it.
Exactly. ridiculous. Anyway, okay, we're gonna move on to another topic. The Republicans would have you believe that their concern about this impeachment is a genuine concern about the process. It's about transparency and access, that it's being done in secret, that people are leaking things selectively, and they just wanna be in the room and know what's being said. And Nancy Pelosi, who one Fox guest described as the high priestess of a cult that is conducting a secret ritual of impeachment, that's literally what they said, that she just won't let them in the room, and that's all they want. But there's a problem with that, and that problem is Ted Yoho, a Republican congressman who is allowed to be in those rooms, but decided to go on CNN instead and quickly grew to regret that decision.
Then why is it legitimate for you to slam an inquiry and slam testimony when you have the opportunity to be in the room for all of it? You are not taking that opportunity. I understand you have other important responsibilities, but respectfully, Congressman, as glad as I am that you're on this show, you don't need to be on this show. You could be in
Like I said, I've got my questions written down for him.
You could be in there deposing Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. Who is asking them? I ask who's asking them because your staff told us 30 minutes ago they didn't even know about the testimony.
No, they know about the testimony. I mean, we've talked about it all week long.
Well, then why did they tell Poppy Harlow that they didn't know about it? And she is, look, I don't have any kids. But I was a kid once, and that's how like a very patient, understanding mom talks to a kind of dumb kid. Like trying to like, you know, like I'm glad that you're here. It's great. You're the best. But you could be in that room right now. And you said that you wrote down questions, but who's asking them? Because you're not. You're not in there. You're talking to me right now. You can't do both at once.
It's gotten to a point where you can't. Again, I guess going with the kid analogy, you don't want to be too aggressive. You don't want to be like, hey, you know how dumb this is?
She was trying to be nice.
Yeah, you have to go, okay. So let me give you the scenarios. Let me give you A and B, what you could be doing versus what you are doing. And do you understand that this doesn't match up with the talking points that you were given by your party, and now they're making you look stupid on TV?
Yeah.
How is it they haven't planned this out yet? They've been complaining about how President Trump needs to get a better person to coordinate his impeachment defense because he's screwing up, which his, of course, his response was, I don't need any defense, I'm the defense.
Mm-hmm.
We've already figured that out.
Please stick with that.
It's working out well. So now when they've coordinated some kind of defense, which is, let's not talk about the substance, instead let's talk about the process and make up what the process is, you know people are gonna be watching what you do. They're gonna see that you say, hey, we can't get in the hearings, and if you make this big spectacle as they did last week, let's go into the hearings. They're gonna start watching to see if you're going into the hearings.
Including by a number of individuals who are allowed in the hearings, but chose to go to the protest instead. And so Yoho could be in there right now, he chooses not to. You said there that they're not gonna focus on the substance, they're gonna focus on the process. That, by the way, includes his questions. So Poppy Harlow has a follow-up and wants to know what questions he would be asking if he was actually doing his job rather than doing a media hit. And he's gonna give you an idea of how seriously he takes what's been revealed.
I plan to go in there. I've got my questions written for him. You know, why was he worried? Was anybody else on the call worried? Did they express the same thing? When did he give his concerns? When did he make that publicly known? Was that written down in a record other than his testimony? When was that submitted? And so those are questions that I wanted to come out.
Okay, so when and how and where were you and what were you eating when you said that? And what kind of jacket did you have on? Did you just say it to two people? Did you say it to three? Who else was on? Yes, that's all fine, and I'm sure he talked about that stuff, obviously. But the content of whether the president was pushing a foreign country to investigate his domestic rivals so that they could get needed military aid, that seems more important to me. It seems a little bit more relevant. But again, it's all process. It's did you follow the way that you're supposed to? Did you submit it in triplicate? Did you fill out your TPS report? Like that's what all of his questions effectively are.
That's what and again, I've said it before. This and I'm the only person who said it. This president is exposing the Republican Party for the frauds, their susceptibility to a strong man, a dictator than anyone else could have done. Mm-hmm. All the times that people said in the past, how exclusionary this party is, how they kowtow to the rich, they giveaways and all this stuff, and they actually demean everyone else. They had a way of kind of covering and hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
he's exposing it all. Or just where they talk about patriotism and all. We don't want this when Obama's in office and he's in there trying to take over the country and the world and tell us what to do. It's all right in front of us that the person who's doing it and that you're the one who's supporting it, it's right in front of us. And that your policies are based in nothing.
Yeah.
So their love for the country is only based in their love for the party.
Yeah.
If you actually cared about the stuff, you'd be in there trying to fix it right now.
Exactly. And so he's not in the room and he's not interested in going to these things. He hasn't been going to them. They also say, though, what we don't like is we don't know what's being said. Now, true, you could be there and then you'd know. But that it's important that we have an idea of what is said and not just rely on selective leaks. And so while it might have seemed like he was sort of falling apart in not going, this next section is worse for him. So Poppy Harlow, I show this, by the way, not to show her sort of systematically dismantling his defense of the president, but because if you're a conservative or a Republican or whatever, and you have bought some of their argument, you need to watch this and understand that they don't care enough about this defense that they're lodging for the president to even read a little bit of text. So he hasn't been in the room. Has he actually read the testimony that he says everyone desperately needs to read? Let's find out.
So you are going to this deposition after you're off the air with us, is that right?
As soon as I'm off the air, yes ma'am.
Okay, and this will be the first one that you attend in the inquiry.
It'll be the first one, but we've been very engaged in what's going on in this whole vote that Ms. Pelosi's bringing up. And I'm glad she's bringing it up, but it's not an official impeachment inquiry. It's a vote to okay the process that they're going through and the transparency.
All members of the committees, so you're one of them, are allowed to read the transcripts of these depositions as they've been happening.
Right.
Have you done that?
We've read the summary of Volcker's and there was one other one we did.
The summary, or you've gone actually to read the full
just
transcripts?
The summary of them, the summaries
Why?
Of them. And
Why?
Going back to,
I get again, you're an important member of an important committee and this is an important inquiry and I'm just confused as to why it seems like you don't think it's been worth the time until today to go or to read them.
So he's been very engaged in it, but he hasn't gone and he read the summaries of one, maybe two of the many depositions that have happened. I mean, if you don't care enough to actually read the testimony that you're saying Nancy Pelosi is potentially breaking the law by not making all that public, but you don't care enough to actually read even all of the summaries, let alone the actual testimony, let alone go to sit in the room. You'll hear it. It'll be a lot easier. If you don't like reading, actually go. You can listen in real time.
Not only was he not prepared for the testimony, which he doesn't want to go to, but he also wasn't prepared for someone to ask him.
Yeah.
How far, I'm sorry, if I'm making some kind of appearance, I get nervous enough to go, I need to prepare myself so that I don't not know what I'm talking about. And if I happen to get to a point where I didn't know what I'm talking about, I'm gonna go, damn it, Jay, you should have prepared yourself. This is a bad position to be in.
Yeah.
There's no shame here. You know, we used to have this thought in the country that our leaders, our elected officials knew more than us. It's being exposed on an hourly basis, how much they don't prepare, how lazy they are. You can't be in sixth grade and not submit a book report.
Yeah.
And then the teacher goes, hey, how come you didn't read the book? You don't go, I don't know, I just kind of skimmed it. You're at least, as a sixth grader, embarrassed enough to go, yeah. My dog ate it.
No, but it would be like, why haven't you come to class? Well, okay, yeah, granted, I didn't go to the class, but I've been very engaged in the process. Did you read the books? No, but I read the Spark Notes. Of all of them? No, one. You're not really engaged in the process. But I do think we found a new defender for the president on TV. I think Ted Yoho is good. It's impressive how he manages to make Rudy Giuliani look prepared for media appearances. Anyway, we do have to move on. We're gonna take a short break. We come back. Scott Walker sticks his foot in his mouth while talking about people trying to put food in their mouths after this. Bernie Sanders recently had a rally and a tour with Rashida Tlaib, a congresswoman who is supporting his candidacy. And Scott Walker, a former failed presidential candidate, he decided to jump in with a gotcha about the socialists, Bernie Sanders and Rashida Tlaib. He tweeted this, anyone notice the backdrop behind Bernie Sanders and Rashida Tlaib looked like the empty shelves of grocery stores in many socialist countries? Irony. There's a little bit of irony, but it's not actually that. So look, he's got the gotcha. He's not the only one. The right-wing blog Gateway Pundit also ran a piece mocking their poor choice of location for a photo opportunity titled, Perfect, two radicals, Bernie Sanders and Rashida Tlaib, stand in front of empty grocery store shelves and push socialism. And even Ted Cruz got in the mix saying, under socialism and communism, people line up for bread. Under capitalism, there are lines and lines of bread at the grocery for people to choose from. Problem is that they weren't at a grocery store. And even if they were, I don't understand that the grocery store just wouldn't be well stocked. I don't know how that proves their point, but it wasn't at all. And they were so excited to attack these people that, again, just like everything in politics, they were so excited that they had to tweet about it, but not excited enough to actually do any fact checking. The photo was taken at the last stop of a corporate greed tour, which Representative Tlaib takes Detroit visitors on. Sanders and Tlaib's final stop was at a food pantry, where free food, water, and clothes are given to low-income families in Detroit. The pantry is running out of bottled water at the moment due to the fact that a number of families in Detroit have had their water shut off because they can't pay the bills. The shelves are not empty because of socialism or communism. It's because it's a food pantry that's doing its job and passing out the food and bottled water that they have to the many needy families in the area. That takes 10 seconds to find out.
Some of them know it. I think Ted Cruz is one of them that probably did.
That tweet's still up, by the way, with no correction, even though we've known since yesterday exactly what was going on.
You can't take tweets down because then that'll.
He could tweet something in response.
No, he
could say,
hey,
by the way, I realize this was really stupid. It was boneheaded of me at best. But I'm too scared of looking weak.
Yeah,
so
he has enough non-thinking supporters that it doesn't matter. He'll leave it up and they go, yeah, that's right.
That's
you
true.
Stay strong with your lie. We like that. So the selection of bread at the food pantry that Ted Cruz is talking about. How about that selection of being able to maybe turn on your faucets and get clean water? Mm-hmm. Things like that that they keep will continue to say is happening and not happening in this country, but claim this happens in socialist countries only. And then we say capitalism, F yeah. So as soon as we say all this, and then we try to ignore the real problems of the country, and this is a perfect example of it. Call these things socialist and cover the fact that they're exposing what capitalism does to so many people in the country.
Exactly.
Just whitewash one thing and lay all the blame on what you want to lay it on, and you get enough idiot people to follow you.
Yeah, there are two basic types of political commentary, whether from politicians or right-wing media, and it's effectively the same thing at this point. There is the, aha, don't actually care about the facts, but I gotcha. And then there's the sort that actually listens and investigates and tries to understand. You've seen the one, now see the other. At that same event that they were so giddy about attacking, there was another media figure. Let's see if you recognize her.
I'm here at the Brightmoore Connection Food Pantry in Detroit, Michigan, where Senator Bernie Sanders joined Representative Rashida Tlaib, this is her district, to talk to constituents about water shortages, water getting cut off for residents if they didn't pay 10 cents of their bill, food shortages, just general poverty here, and how there's all this talk about how Detroit is coming back. Well, it's being seen in downtown Detroit, but in these areas, not so much.
So that is, of course, Emma Vigeland, who is 100% right. And look, Gateway Pundit could have sent one of their journalists there, but they had no interest in doing that. But Emma went and listened to people in the area, and she learned about what's going on there. And through her work, helped to teach other people who have not been to Detroit and don't necessarily know how it's gentrifying in the downtown area. But obviously, a lot of people don't have basic things like food and water. That's a different way to go. I think a better way to go.
It's amazing. So all this capitalism is working, and we talk about the job numbers and all this, and no one asked that second question. These people, these job numbers, and everyone, like the rising lack of unemployment, are they still living? Mm-hmm. Are they surviving? Are their kids making it? Are their kids going to school and you know, the free lunch program screwing them over? Are they compiling a bill there, and then the school comes after them? We've talked about all these stories. The problems escalate from there on out. But we don't talk about the rest of that stuff. It's strictly based in, that damn socialism. Mm-hmm. And it's a scary enough word when they push it this many times, and this many times, they lie, no matter what the argument is, if you just yell socialism,
you're
on their side.
And so that's the thing. All of their attacks are, look at how scary it would be if there was socialism or communism, whether in reality or our weird version of it that we don't really understand. But the thing is, like, look at what we've got right now, not hypothetically after some change, but the actual system we have. So Reverend Rosalind Bouyer, the executive director of that pantry, says that the shelves are empty because we're doing our job, because people need the food. That shows the inhumanity. America needs to do better. That's the sadness of it. For this community, any community in America, to be without food and water, to constantly have to live with housing insecurity or water insecurity, it's so utterly ridiculous. It's so evil. It is evil in of itself. And that's what we have right now. And so let's talk about Scott Walker really fast. Scott Walker, Ted Cruz. Scott Walker might want to take a look at Wisconsin, because apparently food insecurity affects 1 in 5 Wisconsin children. Oh, but that's right. He would actually know about this, because back in his 2013 to 2015 state budget, he dropped at least 15,000 out of work Wisconsin residents from the state's food stamps program. So that 20%, it got a little bit higher thanks to him. It's fun to joke about people not being able to find food under socialism, but he's working his ass off to make sure that under capitalism, they don't have access to food. Ted Cruz, he should actually pay more attention to this issue, because as bad as Wisconsin has it, Texas actually has it worse. Worse than the national average for food insecurity, especially for children. There are literally almost 2 million Texans who are currently experiencing food insecurity, but he doesn't have time to actually propose any sort of fix to that, because he's so busy trying to get people on Twitter.
All those choices of bread on the shelves, but nobody can buy them.
Exactly. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back a little bit more to close out the show. Prepare to lose a couple of IQ points. Here's right-wing grifter Dave Rubin on California's wildfires.
Everything, everything from academia to public utilities to politics, everything that goes woke, that buys into this ridiculous progressive ideology, that cares about what contractors are LGBT or how many black firemen we have or white this or Asian that, everything that goes that road eventually breaks down. It is not how freedom is supposed to operate. What is supposed to happen, Tucker, imagine if your house was on fire. Would you care what the public utility or what the fire company, what contractor they brought in, what gender or sexuality or any of those things he or she was? I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Who would care?
Okay, Tucker Carlson's facial expression while guest talk has never been as appropriate. Thank God most of Fox News' audience is asleep while the TV's on. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? The effort to fight the fires has nothing to do with it. Like, we've talked about this a lot. They have identity politics and that's it. They talk nonstop about how the left only talks about identity politics. But even in the context of a natural disaster, they bring on Dave Rubin to attack concerns over inclusivity on race and sexuality and religion?
I was looking for the story about how everyone is looking for the firefighters to have a certain makeup of gender and sexuality, all the lists of things.
I don't know what he's talking. I did too. I tried to find something. I have no idea what he's talking about. And Tucker didn't either. His eyelids shot open at some point because he didn't know what this moron was babbling about. He eventually gets it together, Tucker does, and says, that's true. None of it's true. And you didn't bring on Dave Rubin to reveal the truth. That's certainly not what happened there.
Well, you know how in the old kids movie Frozen, they built that snowman. But what best happens with guys like this is, you know, do you want to build a straw man? If you build your straw man, build it strong and funny, and we can beat down that argument that we created for the straw man to give.
Oh, that's good.
Do you want to build a straw man?
Oh, Brett Ehrlich. Get on. Forget what we were talking about. Forget the topic. That song has to be made. But anyway, look, I reveal this to
really
only
stupid points. Sorry, go ahead.
It's half done. There's only a few lyrics in that thing to begin with. No, it's awesome. So if you don't watch Tucker Carlson, first of all, good call. You'll maintain your mental health that way. But this is what they do. They bring on idiots, grifters who don't believe anything that they're saying, who get paid by billionaires to spread white supremacy and anti-Semitism and homophobia and Islamophobia and all of that. And they will shove it into every topic. It doesn't matter if it has anything to do with it. Forest fires, fine. Let's make it about diversity. Fox Business constantly talks about this stuff on a business channel. They find ways to turn every topic into this sort of thing. That's what they do. That's what the grift is.
The gays are coming to get you. But somehow the gay man that's on there saying that is not coming to get you. Only that one.
Exactly.
Only those lib gay people are coming to get you.
Exactly. And that's what's so sick about it. But the thing is, Dave Rubin doesn't get paid by billionaires to attack trans people. That's the tool. That's what they all do. That's why Ben Shapiro can't go 5 minutes without talking about the trans community and Michael Knowles and all of them. But that's just the distraction. The billionaires pay them to do tax cuts, to try to get rid of the estate tax, all of that. But all of that is happening not on Tucker Carlson's screen, not on the Daily Wire's screens. No, all of that is going on with right-wing politicians in DC. But you can't look at that. And to be distracted from it, they will distract you with all of this BS, and they'll tie it into whatever topic they need to keep you from knowing what's really going on.
I'm willing to listen to the report that had all this that he's talking about.
We'll see.
I'm willing to find out who it was.
Thank you, JR. As always, great to have you on and for that idea, which we are definitely going to make happen. Thank you, everybody, for watching. That's all the time we got. A couple more days, lots more news to get to. See you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.